This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to Over and Back's Basketball Mysteries of the 1970s. Today's mystery is, what are the most incredible moments of the 1970s? All right, we are back. I'm Jason. With me as usual is Rich, and we are talking about the most incredible moments of the 1970s, moments that are exciting, moments that are clutch, moments that just make you go wow. So it's certainly going to be incomplete. You know, it's really impossible to go through a decade and to find everything that is incredible. So if you feel like we missed something, we forgot your favorite moment, let us know. We can maybe talk about it on a future episode. So, Rich, how's it going?
Good. And also a little note there, too. What's considered incredible to us might not be the same to you. What you think is, oh, my God, how did you guys miss this awesome moment of my, you know, favorite team doing this? You know, again, yeah, we definitely encourage you at Over and Back, Over and Back NBA on Twitter to definitely reach out to us. And just let us know any of your moments or even in the show notes or whatever. You know, people can contact us many different ways. Let us know. What is your favorite moment? What's one? And, yeah, we do have an episode that we're kind of reserving towards the end of the show or the end of the series, rather, that is going to be things we missed. And we will absolutely cover that if there's a moment that you say, oh, my God, how do you not cover this? You got to cover this. We'll absolutely do it because, yeah, it's subjective. This what we consider incredible and what you and I consider incredible versus what other people might. And, yeah, it's hard to maybe we miss some stuff, too. I mean, we are human, David.
We are. We're not robots. We're not basketball mystery solving robots, Rich.
No. I mean, geez.
Yeah. One of the most incredible moments, two of them happen in the same finals, actually the 1970 finals, certainly, you know, greatly mythologized. And we've gotten into it in previous episodes, but, you know, these are key moments. They certainly are worth mentioning.
Absolutely. Yeah. The first one, Jerry West's 60-foot shot. So this is after splitting the first two games of the series, it's, of course, between the Lakers and the Knicks. The teams moved to Los Angeles for game three, and the Lakers promptly grabbed a 56-42 halftime lead. The Knicks, led, of course, by Dave DeBuscher and Dick Barnett, chipped away at the margin in the third quarter and finally drew even at 96-96 with 2 minutes to play. The lead then seesawed after that. Wilt Chamberlain made one of two free throw attempts to tie the score again at 100 with 13 seconds left. DeBuscher scored in a short jumper with 3 seconds left to put New York up by two. The Lakers were out of timeouts, so West took the inbound pass from Chamberlain in the backcourt, dribbled as far as he dared, and then launched up a 60-footer. It found its target as DeBuscher under the basket threw his arms up in disgust, which is a great visual as well. West bomb tied the score at 102-102 and set the game into overtime. The Knicks managed to regroup and ended up winning the game 111-108. But an interesting little note, though, is, of course, you're thinking, wait a minute, he shot it from 60 feet, and they were down by two. What? Well, they didn't have a three-point shot yet, of course. So had West shot taken place today, it would have been worth 3 points, and the Lakers would have won the game in regulation, and it might have changed the course of that series as well, and been like an all-time legendary, incredible. I mean, imagine that, like, you know, hitting a 60-foot shot to win a game in the NBA Finals. I mean, it's just incredible. So, yeah, it of course, you know, with the limitations of the game, I mean, still 102-102, and we had that, which is a great moment as well. And then we'll jump ahead to game seven of this very series, which is, of course, the maybe one of the more, I would say, almost, it's hard to rank it, but it's got to be in that top 10 or even the top five of like iconic moments in NBA history. It's always played. You know it. Everybody knows it if you're a fan, even at least to a small extent of the NBA. And it's Willis Reed marching down the tunnel in Game 7. So here's a little bit of background. For that, prior to Game 7, this is May 8th, 1970 at 7:30 p.m. Reed, the captain and the main force of the multi-talented New York Knicks, of course, was sidelined with an injury that threatened his team chances to win the NBA championship. It's Game 7. You know, they really need this guy. The first four games of the finals, Reed had had scored 37, 29, 38, and 23 while averaging 15 rebounds. So he's a big deal to this team as well. So at 7:34 p.m., Reed limped onto the court, even though people had basically assumed he wasn't going to play the game. The crowd went wild, and his teammates' confidence returned with vengeance. Reed somehow managed to outjump Wilt Chamberlain on the opening tip and then scored the game's first basket on a shot from the top of the key. He then scored the second New York basket from 20 feet out. He did not score again. You know, that's, I guess, you know, it's kind of turning back a little bit where the narrative a lot of people now have to point out, or and rightfully so, that, you know, he didn't really do a whole lot in that game. It was really Walt Frazier that carried a big load. But I mean, still, that confidence of him coming down there and then those first 2 points and beating the tip, and it just really, and Knicks players will say that too. Yeah, he didn't contribute a lot, you know, in terms of the stat line and all that sort of stuff, but he didn't have to. The team was already just super motivated by what he did. But yeah, just one of the most iconic, famous moments in NBA history. And of course, the Knicks went on to win the NBA Finals. So
yeah. And another one involving the Knicks in their long rivalry with the Bullets went through the playoffs for 6 seasons in a row, I believe they played in the playoffs. This one's in the Eastern Conference Finals in 71. Fred Carter for Baltimore in Game 7 hit a decisive jump shot with just over a minute left that gave Baltimore the game and the series. So the one time Baltimore was able to win that series and was able to make it to the finals and having a dramatic upset run. Of course, it did not work out for them very well against the Bucks in the finals, but certainly did well during that series.
And this isn't a singular moment, but one that I think we definitely had to talk about, and it was the Lakers' historic run. So, you know, Elgin Baylor, the Lakers legend, he announced his retirement 9 games into the season. This is 1971, by the way, or that night. So he announces his retirement. That's a, you know, big part of the, you know, Lakers team that's out and gone, and people kind of wonder, hey, what's going to happen to these Lakers now? Well, they began a winning streak that would last for 2 months, totaling 33 games. So they did pretty okay without Elgin. November 5th, 1971, the Lakers beat the Baltimore Bullets 110-106. This began their win streak. Again, as I mentioned, they did not lose a game for more than 2 months. On December 12th, they beat Atlanta 104-95 for their 21st in a row, which broke the NBA record, which was set by the Milwaukee Bucks just a year later. And then, of course, that run would go into 33 games and still be an iconic, you know, all-time win streak that I really just don't think. Do you think that one's ever going to get broken?
No, I can't imagine.
I can't fathom a team being like, let's do it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, somewhere in that line, like, they're going to be like, all right, I'm taking a day off. Or, like, you know, like, they're going to just chill. Like, coaches aren't that way anymore. I just don't think that they would be that methodical. And that 33 is a lot. We saw that, the grind with, what was that Miami one? They went to, what, 20? Did they get to 30?
I don't remember. They got to 27.
27, that was it. Yeah, and like, that was like, oh my God. And like, you could tell that it was like wearing on those guys, and it was a grind. Like, yeah, 33, that's just, I just can't fathom that happening.
No, yeah, that one, that's pretty much impossible to imagine. So yeah, for sure. So the next one is Roger Brown versus Rick Barry in the 1972 season. It's a regular season game. This is from rememberTheABA.com, but some vivid memories there where the Pacers are down by 3 with 2 seconds left. Freddie Lewis banks in a 3-pointer to send the game into overtime. In overtime, the Pacers are down with 10 seconds to go. The Nets have the ball out of bounds, and Roger Brown jumps in front of Barry, draws a charge. Then the Pacers clear out the floor for Brown with Barry playing defense. With just 2 seconds left, Brown drives to the basket and puts up a soft finger roll for the win. Barry had 48 points in that game, but Roger Brown coming through in the clutch to answer the bell once again. Just we talked about in some previous episodes on the Pacers, just what a tremendous performer he was, and how he matched up with, you know, Barry, the class of the ABA during that time. Brown wasn't as good for nearly as long, but at his peak was absolutely as good as Barry. A couple other interesting ones, the Pacers versus the Denver Rockets, later the Nuggets, in the 72 Western Division semifinals. In Game 2 at Indianapolis, Ralph Simpson hit a floating jumper with 4 seconds left to give the Rockets a 106-105 victory. The Rockets actually surprisingly took the Pacers to 7 games in that series, but the Pacers ended up winning and going on to win the ABA Finals. Also in 72, in the Eastern Division Finals, the Squires versus the Nets, a Julius Erving and Rick Barry duel in Dr. J's rookie year. It was actually in Virginia, and Irving had a big game with 35 points, but the Nets ended up winning. And Barry banked in a three-pointer at the end of the game to seal the win, 94-88. So a great one there. 1973, the Lakers against the Bulls. The Lakers are down by one with 33 seconds left. Chamberlain blocks Norm Van Leer's shot. Then he throws a long pass to Gail Goodrich for the eventual game-winning basket. The Bulls have one last chance to get on top, but they let the 24-second shot clock expire. And then with 2 seconds left, Van Leer ends up fouling West, and the Bulls lose 95-92. Another one involving the Bulls that went better for them against the Pistons in 74. It's Game 7. Chet Walker hit a head fake 10-footer with 3 seconds to go, and then Dennis Autry tipped Dave Bing's inbounds pass to seal the win.
Move on now. Kareem skyhook in Game 6 in 1974 is another iconic moment in NBA history. Milwaukee led by 12 points in the first half and by 6 in the stretch, but a long jumper by John Havlicek tied the score 86-86. The Bucks' Oscar Robertson was caught in a 24-second violation as the time expired in regulation. So with the Bucks leading late in the first overtime, Havlicek repeated his heroics, converting his own missed shot to tie the score at 90-90 to force a second extra session of this game. In the second overtime, Havlicek scored 9 of Boston's 11 points. It's a theme. John Havlicek good in this game, including a rainbow jumper over Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with 7 seconds left for a 101-100 Boston lead. With the champagne about to be uncorked, Milwaukee called a timeout and set up one last play, not for Jabbar, but for swingman John McLaughlin. However, the play was broken when McLaughlin couldn't shake himself free, so Jabbar stood to the right of the lane with the ball. Abdul-Jabbar looked for someone else to pass to, but could find no one, so he dribbled to the baseline, turned, and put up his graceful skyhook. It nestled through the net for a 102-101 Bucks win that tied the series at 3 games apiece. The Celtics then, of course, bounced back like champions for Game 7 in Milwaukee. They changed the strategy and began to double-team Kareem, which freed up Dave Cowens to concentrate more on offense. Cowens responded nicely with 28 points and 14 rebounds as the Celtics coasted to a 102-87 win and Boston's 12th NBA title.
Yeah, and we talked about that quite a bit with Bob Ryan on the previous show looking at the Celtics.
Yes.
So that's obvious. Yeah, the Celtics had two pretty classic finals in 3 years with the finals against the Bucks and then the even more famous triple overtime game against the Suns, which we're going to get into a little bit in just a minute. So the next is, and we talked about this in our playoff upsets episode, but probably the greatest upset in playoff history, the Spirits of St. Louis, 32 wins, upsetting the Nets, 58 wins in the first round of the 75 Eastern Division semifinals. The Spirits are up at this point 3-1. They're in Game 5 in New York, and it looked like the Nets were about to win, but Don Adams forces a turnover. Julius Irving, he dribbles the ball off his leg into the backcourt. And then Freddie Lewis gets the ball, dribbles to the top of the key with 3 seconds left. He hits a jumper to win the game and the series for the Spirits. The Spirits would eventually lose in the next round to Kentucky, although they put up a decent fight as well. But the Spirits, of course, known mostly for antics, but for one series, they put together an amazing run and beat the absolutely the class of the league that year.
Miracle at Richfield, a very famous one from the Cavs Bullets. This is 1976 Eastern Finals. 5 foot runner with 4 seconds remaining. It broke an 85 all tie in Game 7. It was Dick Snyder hitting the shot. 75-76 season with Austin Carr, Bingo Smith, Jim Jones, Dick Snyder, and the newly acquired Nate Thurman. Bill Fitch led. Cavaliers were just a pretty solid team, 49-33 record, which is the best record in the Central Division. Bill Fitch had received the Coach of the Year award, and the Cavs made their first ever playoff appearance. The Cavs won the series against the Boston Bullets 4-3, and because many of the heroics and last-second shots, the series became locally known as the Miracle of Richfield. However, hampered by injuries, particularly to Jones, the Cavs, they proceeded to lose to the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals of the NBA playoffs, but the Cavaliers still kind of hold on to the Miracle of Richfield as being just a big deal for that franchise and that town especially, and only recently have they been able to succeed that with new greatness, but for a while, that was it for the old Cavs, but definitely just a great singular moment with Dick Snyder, and then just a great season all around for that team.
Absolutely. And Game 4 of the 1976 ABA semifinals, the Nets versus Spurs, this is a very spirited series. We got into it a bit in the Dr. J episode on his Nets years, but he scored a game high 35 points, grabbed 14 rebounds and had 4 assists. He had 11 fourth quarter points, including a game winning dunk to win 110-108. It took 7 games, but the Nets were able to beat the Spurs during that series. The Nets and the Spurs had a lot of bad blood. There were some fights during that series. Both the teams had a couple of trades with each other, so there were a lot of players who were used to had played with each other, so there's a lot of perhaps some personality conflicts that from being with ex-teammates, or just, you know, the competitive nature of someone you're very close to. But that series certainly got a little nasty, and Irving was able to have some key clutch moments. And speaking of Irving in the clutch in 76, he also had another great moment in great moments in the ABA finals that year.
Yeah, and in the background, if you hear like an odd noise, that's my dog dreaming. He's having a, I don't know what he's doing in his dream, but he's having a lot of fun. Nice. So if you hear some odd like squealing, I don't know what he's doing, but he's really enjoying it. So go for him. 1976, this is the ABA Finals for Dr. J. He hits a game winner in game one of the ABA Finals. He quoted, "It wasn't really the shot I wanted. This was he hit the shot over Bobby Jones, who was one of the better defenders in either league, in the ABA or the NBA, to moralize the Nuggets, and it gave the Nets a leg up in the series. Game six, the Nets trailed 80-58 with just 18 minutes remaining. They rallied to win that game. They outscored the Nuggets 34-14 in the fourth quarter. Irving had 31 points. That was tied his series low, which that's pretty not bad if 31 is your series low. But his floor game in that particular game was just unbelievable. He had 19 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, 4 block shots. Just a great, prime ABA Julius Irving, stat line there. A little bit more about that sort of final stretch in game six, which, of course, won them the finals. Irving received the ball at the top of the key, and he operated in a kind of a 1-4 set. He attacked the basket, accepted a double team, and kicked the ball to open teammates who either made shots or drew fouls against their defenders who were closing out on them, in part because the defensive attention that Irving drew. So everybody was trying to get Irving, but he was smart enough to give up his shots and get past his other people. And guys really benefited. And they, as the team, they, of course, benefited. One in particular was shooting guard Super John Williamson. He scored 16 points in that fourth quarter to help the Nets win. So, yeah, even though Dr. J didn't have to dominate on his own, it was his passing acumen and just his basketball smarts that ended up winning the Nets that game and the ABA Finals that year.
Yeah, so. And that's the good account of that from RememberTheABA.com that gets into that Finals series and Irving's performance in particular very well.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful website as well. We've mentioned it many times throughout this, but if you're not checking out that site, it's just an absolute RememberTheABA.com, just a wealth of knowledge. That it's just incredible of what they have in terms of pictures and visuals or whatever. Just an absolute asset to us this entire summer.
Yes.
For this series. Absolutely. So they are good people. So go them.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go Garfield, Hurd, and the shot. Another moment says the Suns-Celtics 3 overtime game that we mentioned. There was an unacknowledged timeout at the end of the first overtime that had been granted to Boston's Paul Silas that would have resulted in a technical foul and given the Suns a chance to win. Referee Richie Powers, who's a great name, by the way, he chose to ignore the signal, and the team's played on. The second overtime, Phoenix grabbed a 1-point lead with 4 seconds left, but that guy again, John Havlicek, raced the length of the floor and scored on a 15-foot bank shot that brought hundreds of Celtics fans pouring onto the court. After order was restored, the officials put 1 second back on the clock and prepared to give Phoenix the ball. That's when the Suns' Paul Westphal asked for and received a timeout he knew his team did not have. The strategy resulted in a technical foul, which stretched Boston's lead to 2, but enabled the Suns to make the inbound pass from midcourt, which was smart, really super smart strategy when you really think about it. Garhard caught the ensuing pass, turned and sank a jumper at the buzzer to send the game into its third overtime, which stunned the Boston crowd, which, of course, was waiting to jump onto that court and just celebrate the win. You can see it. There's video of this as well, and you can just see the entire baseline is just filled with fans and just their emotion when they aren't able to jump onto the court and when the game is going to a third overtime. It's just incredible. Of course, you get into 3 overtimes is going to be a little tricky here, and key players on both teams had fouled out. So seldom used reserve Glenn McDonald rose to the occasion for the Celtics. He scored 6 points in the third overtime to lead Boston to an exhausting 128-126 win. 2 days later, the Celtics beat the Suns 87-80 in Phoenix to wrap up their 13th NBA championship. So.
So during the Blazer Mania days, one key moment that really isn't talked about that much, game one of the 1977 Western Conference Finals, the Blazers against the Nuggets, a Nuggets who'd come from the ABA and were a stout team and had a whole bunch of ex ABA players, David Thompson, Dan Issel, Matt Calvin, the whole roster filled with Willie Wise, Byron Beck. And, It went six games. It was a pretty close series. And game one, Maurice Lucas, also former ABA player, of course, hit the game winner with 11 seconds left in the game. He actually broke the play Jack Ramsey had called and backed his man down and just hit a hit a jumper. And then Ramsey later, you know, got on him about, you know, about breaking the play. And Lucas was just like, you know, hey, Jack, I made the shot, you know, so let's get over. And then and Ramsey accepted that. But that's a funny, just given the personality of Jack Ramsey, kind of funny. But and another famous one, the Bullets Sonics finals game seven from 1978. Bullets had a big lead, but the Sonics were able to get it from 11 just to down to 4 with 90 seconds left. Mitch Kupchak for the Bullets came up with a three-point play, and then Freddie Brown for the Sonics hit a short jumper, and Paul Silas got tipping, and it was 101-99. Silas was then fouled Wes Unseld, who was not a good free throw shooter, and there was a chance in that the Bullets were able to that the Sonics were going to be able to pull it out, but Unseld hit both his free throws, and then moments later, Washington sealed it and was able to win 105-99. So cutting it close there, but they were able to Unseld hitting those clutch free throws was able to make it. Not the most exciting thing, but, you know, Unseld was not really the most exciting player, but
this
was an outlet pass. He wasn't doing all that much exciting, but, you know, coming through in the clutch.
This one is the 1979 Eastern Finals, the Bullets versus the Spurs, and Bob Dandridge hits a 15-foot jumper, 8 seconds remaining, and he broke a 105 all tie. And this was one of five Game 7 game winners in NBA history with 10 seconds or less. So just a huge moment for that franchise as well, with a, you know, just a great all-time great moment.
Yeah, and
great shot by Bob Dandridge.
Yeah, and the Bullets, they overcame a 3-1 deficit to win this series.
Yes, oh yeah, 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 so. Of course. Oh, and then last but not least, this one, not heroics, but I guess heroic in a different way. It's Daryl Dawkins. He broke two backboards in his career. One was at Kansas City's Municipal Auditorium on November 13th, 1979, and a second backboard 23 days later at the Philadelphia Spectrum. And because his dunks resulted in delays while teams went to find another backboard, the NBA eventually decided that they should probably just change the rims and make them collapsible. So we can thank Daryl Dawkins for that, but I thought that had to be at least mentioned at some point on the greatest moments, because just an incredible iconic, especially that guy with that much power just destroying these Nets too. And like we saw, you know, Shaq, who eventually had his own displays of breaking, like his breaks were just like, you know, the station was kind of like bent or whatever, and there was one time where, you know, the backboard fell or whatever, but these are like, you know, he dunked it, just glass just went all over the place, and those are just awesome to watch. Yeah. So I had to mention those.
They're crazy, absolutely. Yeah, there's no incredible, certainly fits
exactly.
Yes, so so thanks for everyone for checking us out. You can find us at hardwareproxism.com. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. If you search for Over and Back, you'll find us, and leave us a rating and review if you can. And also, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we're back again soon.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.